Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Du Hirsu,
with a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening.
He also told them this parable. To some who trusted in themselves, that they were righteous and regarded others with contempt. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee, standing by himself, was praying thus, God, I thank you that I am not like other people, thieves, rogues, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give a tenth of all my income. But the tax collector, standing far off, would not even look up to heaven, but was beating his breast and saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I tell you, this man went down to his home justified rather than the other. For all who exalt themselves will be humbled, but all who humble themselves will be exalted.
Even though I love somebody of the same sex, do I still have a place to learn about God's text? And even though my wife and I can't get along, do we still have a place to come and sing God's song? And even though I have a personality disorder, do I still have a place to bathe in God's water? Even though HIV is affecting me, do I have a place to go where I can finally be free? Even though I'm homeless and I struggle to eat, do I still have a place to keep me off of the street? And even though I can't speak English that well, do I still have a place where I can come and get help?
Come as you are.
The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Say ho, ho. Okay, good. Just making sure. All right. See, it's the same thing. The Lord be with you. And also, with Jesus was a rapper. That's what I think. But I won't go there this morning. I'm excited to be here with you all. This is like a second home for me on the West Coast. I love The Table. It is an awesome place. You guys are my home away from home. So thank you for letting me be here and share a little bit with you all. I'm just going to pray, and then hopefully God is going to speak something today. God, we thank you that you gathered here, gathered us here, and that you dwell with us, Lord, in the midst of ambiguity, in the midst of uncertainty, in the midst of all of our questions, that you hold us close. And I pray for those of us who come needing to hear a word of comfort, a word of challenge, that you will give us all of that and more. Could you please speak into this room, speak into each of our lives, transform the words that I speak into something that is helpful before it hits the ears of the listeners. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, I call this Frank and Phil went up the hill because, I don't know, I like to give people names. So I think Frank the Pharisee and Phil the tax collector went up on the hill. Now, just a little bit of background of this story. I know that you all have already studied the parables, so you know a lot about the parables. But it's in Luke, which one of the themes of Luke is about the outcast, right? So we kind of hear, it's right on the heels of the parable of the persistent widow. If you know that story, this woman who prays to God, please grant me mercy, and this is a woman, obviously, who's vulnerable in our society. And so now we get into this, and we start with the first line, which says, to some who were confident of their own righteousness and looked down on everyone else, Jesus told this parable. Now, I don't know about you, but the minute that I first hear this, I think, okay, good. I don't have to listen to this. This is to those people who are judging others, the ones who are confident in their own righteousness. Good thing I'm not guilty of that, right? Good thing I don't ever judge people at the checkout line at Whole Foods to see who brought their reusable bags and who didn't. Good thing I don't look out there to see who's driving a Prius or who's going green and who's not, or who is, you know what? We even get into a contest about who's unjudgy. Like, I'm more unjudgier than you. Look at that judgy person. I'm so less judgy than them. I'm going to judge them for being judgy. So we all fall into this. Every movement has this, right? And so I just think it's funny that he says to some, because I think he's like, to some, wink, wink, and you're like totally implicated right away. You're like, yeah, to all. We all need to hear this morning, I think. I think we all are guilty of some of these things, of looking down on others. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee, the other a tax collector. Like, you know, you're like following the story, they go up to the temple, and then there's a tax collector going up to the temple to pray. Like, what the heck is he doing here? Like, you can just imagine, if you know about tax collectors, they were in cahoots with the occupiers, right? We're an occupied people, and we're living in oppression, and now somebody who is a part of the system is hanging out in the temple. Like, what is Phil doing in here? Or wait, was it Frank or Phil? Phil and Frank. Okay. Phil, yeah, Phil was the tax collector. What is Phil doing in here? Isn't that the same Phil who, like, is always bilking us of all this money and, you know, doing all these kind of things? Who does he think he is coming up into the temple like that? Uh-uh. That's not happening. And you can imagine what those whispers would have been. And so... You know, it's almost like a pastor and a murderous drug dealer walk into the church. You know, it would have had those same kind of ideas where he just had no business going in there. What is he thinking? You know, we think about, we say things like all means all, and that sounds really great, but this is really challenging, that notion. Like, what does it mean? Is the temple really big enough for all, for our enemies? And that's like a legitimate question. It's not a rhetorical question. Is it really big enough? So question number one for me, should our place of worship be big enough for everyone? And we may not answer that today, but I can tell you, I can honestly say, I've been in situations where it may not be the right thing for somebody to come to church. We know that there are safety issues. We had somebody who had been a child predator, and we had to navigate through how we were going to welcome them. What did it mean to welcome them into our church, and how were we going to do that, and how, you know, who were they going to be able to hang out with, and, you know, all that stuff. So we say it, but it can get really messy really quickly. So that's, I think, one of the things that this story can bring up. So the Pharisee stands by himself, and he prays, God, I thank you that I'm not like other people, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. Now, I don't even know where to start. There's so many problems with this prayer. Like, I think Jesus is like hyperbole when he's telling this story. Now, remember, it's a parable, so it didn't happen, right? It happens, but it didn't necessarily happen. And so Jesus is, I mean, he's really like giving it to this Pharisee. Now, number one, his prayer isn't really for God, right? And how many times have you ever seen this where we just are about our own agendas, and then we like, okay, God, bless my own agenda here. I'm going to like do what I want to do, and I'm going to hang out with the people I want to hang out, and then you just bless it, okay? How many times do we do that? And it becomes this self-righteous thing, this self-serving thing. I've seen where I've literally held hands in prayer circles and heard prayers basically like, and dear God, I pray that some people that are being very difficult right now, their name rhymes with Bethany, they know who they are. You know, I've literally sat in circles like this. I've been in churches where there were wars. And that's what happens. I mean, it becomes war the minute that the Pharisee, like, it's not just a subtle hint. It's like, and this dude right here, like, he points him out. He calls his name. I've been in churches where this has happened, where we've gotten so... self-centered that we've forgotten the big picture. We've forgotten the main thing, right? Now, I know it might surprise you that some people may not be into having rappers in their church, but there are places where this has gotten people fired. I went to a seminary and did my thing, and the guy who brought me didn't have a job by the time the whole controversy had cleared up. So this happens. This happens where we turn these places of worship into self-serving battlefields. The second problem is that he's standing by himself. I think that's a big thing. It's like he is all alone, because you know what? He may be saying to himself, like, I'm the only one who can really stand in this place, because I'm the only one who's righteous enough to stand where I'm standing. And how often does our own self-righteousness isolate us from others? And we've all been there, right? We've all been the annoying vegan at Thanksgiving that like guilts our, like shames our parents, like, really, do we need to do this on Thanksgiving? And isolate ourselves, right? We've done it. We've all done it. Or some of us have done it. I'll just tell you really briefly about my faith journey, is I fell deeply in love with Jesus in a way that was beautiful and wonderful. I had never really experienced Christian community growing up, and or at least explicitly stated Christian community. And when I went to my college and I saw these people that were loving each other and they loved God, and it was like amazing. And I just dove right in, and I was so fired up. I was just like, I was praying, I was reading my Bible, I wasn't cursing, at least for a while. But it was so incredible. And as I dove deeper and deeper into it, it was awesome, except for the fact that I became a total jerk. That's the only problem, is nobody wanted to hang out with me anymore. My friends all kind of walked away, and it was very isolating. And so we began to pray and say, oh, how can we save those unsaved people that we are not in relationship with and that we never really want to talk to? And so it became very isolating. We are not meant to do this life of faith alone. We are meant to be in community. My friend Nadia says this. She says, God does not give sufficient amounts of faith to individuals. God only gives it to communities. So we need each other. There are times when my wife and I were going through difficult times with our fertility issues, and there we were just in a dark, depressed place, and that's a whole nother story. But as we sat there, I knew I couldn't believe the things I was supposed to believe that Sunday morning. I couldn't sing the things I was supposed to sing. I needed someone else to sing them for me. I needed someone else to believe them for me, because I couldn't do it myself on that day. And that's why we do this in community. That's why we don't just sit in our houses on Sunday and do our own thing, although that's a beautiful thing. We need each other. We really do. And so that's the problem, part of the problem with this Pharisee. Next thing is that he's comparing himself to others. And we all do this. And I think I mentioned some of the ways we do that. But how many of us, you know, turn on the TV, ooh, thank God I am not like that person on Jerry Springer. Oh, thank God I'm not like that bachelor. He's annoying. Or maybe occasionally with my wife when she makes me watch it. I don't enjoy it at all. Don't worry. But on a serious note, we even look at tragedy. We look at this shooting of you know, Fort Hood, and we think, oh, I'm not like that monster. You know, I'm totally different. I'm a separate species from that person. And this is what we do. We create, we other people, you know, we create this other category because it makes us feel okay. It gives us certainty, right, about the world. And this is inviting us, this story is inviting us to remember that we got a little bit of Pharisee in us and a little bit of tax collector in us. And it's both and, right? I come from a Lutheran tradition. That's where, at least where I go to seminary. And so this Martin Luther, he talks about the words he uses. He says, simul justus et peccator. Say, simul justus et peccator. And that word means simultaneously saint and sinner. So it's that both and. Simul is like that both and thing. And there's so many things in our faith that have a simul relationship. There's go out into the world, and there's build up your faith in a community that loves you. You know, there's righteousness and there's humility. There's accountability and there's grace. There's a lot of both ands. There's hot, there's cold. We are all of this at once, right? We're not either or. And so this should give us all a little bit of humility when we're trying to figure out who's in and who's out. I know you already did the parable of the weed and wheat, and this story is all about that. Having patience with each other and having humility and remembering we are all God's family, no matter where we come from. So, and then, you know, the Pharisee starts talking about what he does. And I'm like, you know, he says, I fast twice a week and give a tenth of all I get. Now, we give the Pharisee, like, we bash the Pharisees a lot, right? They get a bad rep. But I'm thinking to myself, like, great job, Pharisee. Like, this is what we actually need. Pharisees are not bad. You know, it was a Pharisee that was able to allow Mary and Joseph to evade Herod. The Pharisee told him where to go. Pharisees are keepers of the law. And Jesus, a Torah-observing Jew, is into keeping the law. The law is a gift from God. This is not a bad thing. We make it to be the enemy, and this is really dangerous, especially in light of our relationships with our Jewish sisters and brothers. How we talk about this is really important in a post, they call it Shoah, post-Shoah or post-Holocaust context that we live in. We got to be really careful how we talk about this. And so it's really important that we don't just Pharisee bash. And we realize that giving twice a week and giving a tenth of all I get is really wonderful, and we need more just economic practices in our society. This, you know, to tithe is to, in at least the spirit of tithing, is about redistribution and about making sure that we all have enough. And these are all really wonderful things. So it's important that we remember this. But the problem, of course, is that when we start doing the right thing, we start giving our little 10% or whatever we do, we start to notice everybody else who's not doing the right thing around us. Like, we become, you know, those people who have become enlightened about race. Race is such an interesting conversation to me in this country, because you arrive, you know, you're either, you're not racist anymore. You know, I used to be racist, but now I'm totally cured of racism. It's like, sorry, man, you're swimming in it every day. Okay, so a lot of times we say, well, let's just bash on these celebrities for being caught in their racist moments, rather than taking that opportunity to examine our own racism and say, how am I still in this same boat with Mel Gibson? How am I still contributing to the larger picture of race and all the ways that we exploit and oppress others? And that's a missed opportunity. So the vegan movement, the Tea Party movement, they're all guilty of this type of zealotry, right? We all have a zealot faction of all these movements. And I think the question for us is, how do we have zeal without being a zealot? How do we get fired up about this faith? How do we get so pumped about God's grace in Jesus that we want to share it with the world, and we want to have, like, as much, we want to do the right things. We want to give the 10%. We want to fast twice a week. And yet, we want to have humility and patience for those who aren't quite there yet. And we want to know that God's timing is not our timing, and to remember that. And I don't know many people who have ever achieved that, to be honest. I really don't. Because the minute you start, human nature, the minute you start doing the right thing, you just start looking at everybody else who's not doing the right thing. But the tax collector, he stood at a distance. He would not even look up to heaven. I almost cried when I read this the other day. Because I thought, how many people have stood at a distance in our churches? How many people have been told, you're not worthy? You're not welcome. We don't like your kind here. We don't approve of your lifestyle. We have a whole generation of young people that are standing at a distance. They're tired of it. They're tired of being told that who they are isn't good enough, or that they need to change who they are. I met a high schooler named Alan a few years ago. I was at a gay teenage Christian event, and I was helping with some of the music. And Alan came up to me halfway through the event, and he came up to me in tears, and he said, I get bullied all the time at school. And I'm hugging him, and I'm trying to comfort him, and I say, well, you know, you always have your church family, and that's a beautiful thing. And he said, sometimes it can be just as bad at church. And he told me that, and my heart broke. If he can't experience God's love and God's grace in that place, where is he going to experience it? And so I want to say this to those of you who are here. There are maybe some in this very room who have stood at a distance before. We know what that feels like. To feel far off, not only because of our own shame, but because of all the shaming of others. And if that's ever happened to you, I want to say that I am sorry that is not what God wants, and that never should have happened. That's not the God that I believe in. That's not the church that I want to be a part of. So people that have stood off at a distance, they've had good reasons to stand off, and we got to work on that. I wrote a little piece about the church. It's called 35 Theses. No spirit, smoke and mirrors, broken bells in the church. Sour wine and the bread went stale in the church. In communion, I don't mean to rail on the church, but there's an elephant that's bigger than a whale in the church. They're telling people that they're going to hell in the church, while they can't even live right themselves in the church. Or else they lie and tell them all is well in the church, while kids starving and crying out for help from the church. Poor babies never got held in the church, but the pro-life signs get held in the church. Gay sisters and her brothers were expelled in the church, while the sinners and pretenders all excelled in the church. That's why many people have rebelled in the church, because they know on some level we have failed in the church. No wonder so many are repelled in the church, because something smells in the church. Some days I wonder what they're trying to sell in the church. Serve your neighbor or just try to serve yourself in the church. Chasing profit, God's prophets got shelved in the church. False gods feel like we worship Baal in the church. I'm tired of the lies that we tell in the church. Males trying to hold down females in the church. When's the last time a preacher went to jail in the church? Not for being greedy, trying to steal in the church. Not for chasing kids or chasing tail in the church, but for fighting the disparity of wealth in the church. It's time we start lifting up the veil in the church. Some traditions need to get killed in the church. 500 years behind, we have trailed in the church. Finally, apologize to Galileo in the church. Is there anybody else in the church that wants to try to get back to the real in the church? That wants to try to do God's will in the church? Sola gloria Deo in the church. It's sola gloria Deo in the church. So my 35 theses, I'm a nail to the church. But he beat his breast and he said, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. See, the tax collector has this visceral sadness, this shame that overcomes him. It's the same action that the people had, the witnesses had when they left crucifixion of Jesus. They beat their breast in sadness. And many of us know what that feels like, to be so mired in shame that you can't even look up to God. You feel like you can't even look to church. You've done that one thing that's defined you, and it just haunts you over and over again. You've had that one thought that you just can't shake, and you feel so much remorse over it. And so we become defined by our failures, and we become paralyzed. But then he says, God, have mercy on me. And that's the last piece of action that we get from the story, is just, God, have mercy on me. And then it kind of hangs for a minute. And you can imagine people thinking, well, okay, so does God have mercy, or like what happens? And you can imagine that people in the ancient world would be pretty certain about what's going to happen here, because they know, they're thinking, well, I mean, we know who should be the hero here and who should be the goat. We kind of have that figured out, right? But they know all the things we know. They know that God is gracious and compassionate and slow to anger and rich in love. They know that. They know that God is close to the brokenhearted. They know that God's mercies are new every day. So they know how merciful God is, and yet they still fall into that trap like we do of wondering, is God really going to be merciful here? But then, boom, Jesus drops this. I tell you that this man, rather than the other, went home justified. For all who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. That's like a mic drop moment right there, like, boom, and walk away. Drop the mic and walk away. That's like the Sixth Sense and, you know, Usual Suspects and plot twists, you know, Primal Fear, what else? Those kind of movies, Crying Game. I don't know, all these movies that, well, that's a different plot twist. Yeah, that's, maybe we don't want to do that one. But you know what I'm saying. Bring it back. But that, to me, is that's the punchline of the whole parable, is when he speaks of this justification, right? Now we can, you know, what is Jesus getting at here? We could glean some, you know, some moral truths out of this. We could say, well, I just need to be more humble, and then I'll be granted justification. We could say, oh, no, so what he means is, I just need to have the humility of the tax collector and the righteousness of the Pharisee, and I have to put them together and live my life. And yeah, those are good things, right? But that's not where I get my hope in this story. I get my hope from one word in this story. It comes from the 14th verse. It's the word justification, justify, right? That word justified, I want to unpack that word for a minute. The next slide, we say, where does our justification come from, right? That's, to me, part of what this parable is about. Does it come from our giving 10%? Does it come from fasting twice a day? Does it come from knowing that you need God and being humble enough that God is finally convinced that you need God? It doesn't actually come from any of those things. The word justified in Greek is dikaiō. Say dikaiō. Y'all got a little Greek. You didn't know you're going to get some Greek today, did you? The word, it means to render righteous. And the most important thing here is the verb tense. It's perfect passive participle. I'm not like a grammar major guy, but the emphasis is on passive here to me. It's a passive verb. It's not an active verb. Now, our faith is an active thing, but what actually justifies us is God's love and God's grace. The dikaiō of God is what gives me comfort and what gives me hope that I'm lovable when I don't feel very lovable. It's not something we achieve, but it's something that we receive as a free gift from God. Our trophies don't do this. Our prayers don't do this. Our power, our position, our prestige, our possessions. None of this is what justifies us. What justifies is dikaiō. Dikaiō leads us out of our own self-righteousness and isolation. Dikaiō humbles us because we know how unworthy we truly feel at times. There's nothing we can do to earn it. Nothing we can do to make God love us any more or any less. All of our efforts are vital, right? We need all these efforts. We absolutely need people doing God's work in the world, but that's not where we get our belovedness badge from. We are God's. We are made in God's image. We are knitted together, formed in the womb, and God calls each one of us by name. We are justified. So let's go tell the whole world that God's grace is big enough for tax collectors, terrorists, two-timers. This grace is big enough for Pharisees, failures, and screw-ups. And so we need to get that message out there. So now, may you know the righteous actions of the Pharisee, the humility of the tax collector, and the dikaiō that is big enough for both of them and for the whole world. Amen.
I wonder, will justice come? I think I hear mercy calling, with each other walking humbly with
do
our
justice.
God.
Do justice, love,
do
mercy,
justice,
walk. Do justice, love, mercy, walk. Do justice, love, mercy, walk.
Humbly
walk, humbly walk. Do justice, love, mercy, walk. Do justice, love, mercy, walk. Do justice, love, mercy, walk. Humbly walk, humbly walk.